promenade across the floor, sashay right on out the door, and into the glade, and everybody promenade.
You're tuned to the Square Dance Radio Network. Today is Wednesday, March 14th, 2012.
And you're listening to the Do-Si-Do Show, episode number 37.
Hi, I'm your host, Dale Hodge from Columbia, Maryland.
And I'm Barb Jarvis from Wheeling, Illinois. Hello, Dale, and hello, Square Dance community. Today we have the third part of our interview with Roy and Betsy Gatta from New Jersey.
Yeah, I've been enjoying learning a lot about them.
Yeah, they've been in the business a long time. Roy is a cure and Betsy is a caller, and they've got a lot of dances under their belts.
Yeah, they do, and they just keep racking them up as well.
Yep, very popular.
So what did you do this past weekend, Barb?
This past weekend I was fortunate enough to see the show Showboat. It was done at the Opera Theater in Chicago, and that was wonderful, wonderful presentation. And for anybody who knows the show, the song Old Man River is the highlight, at least it is in my book. And got to hear that twice, so that was really cool.
Wonderful.
We also had a birthday party for my brother-in-law, and I played handballs on Sunday morning, so that's always a little nerve-wracking.
Oh, great, great.
And how about you? What did you do this past week?
Kathy and I moved our office. We were in the house in what the floor plan calls the dining room, and we moved into what the floor plan refers to as the office. Visiting friends on Sunday and a little more office move on Sunday night. Who'd you like to say hello to today?
Shout out this week to my sisters. One of my sisters, I think I mentioned, had a birthday recently. She's celebrating a big birthday. And the other sister's undergoing a little bit of medical stuff right now, and some of it is undiagnosed, so we're a little concerned about Carol, and sending good thoughts out to the universe for some healing and health for her. And you?
My daughters, I know I've said that before, but as they are growing into beautiful young women, I just miss the time that they used to be home every night and we'd have dinner together and talk about their day and whatnot. So at this point, I see them, I don't know, between one and three times a week, and it's just, I just
still,
miss
still not
them.
Enough, huh?
Yeah, so... Hi, Aaron. Hi, Callie.
Very
so,
good.
Yep.
Hi, girl.
Very good. So let's get back now to our interview with Roy and Betsy Gatta as we talk about some more of their square dance history.
Okay.
I know Legacy isn't around anymore, but can you tell us a little bit about what it was and your involvement with Legacy?
Legacy was a leadership group that was supposed to cross the boundaries. In other words, it acknowledged that the callers and cures are leaders, and everybody looks to the callers and cures for guidance. But the callers and cures are not the only leaders in square dancing. The people who hold officerships in the clubs, people who hold offices in associations, and of course, when Legacy was around, there were probably a whole lot more state and national state associations. But those people needed to be acknowledged equally with callers and cures as leaders, and Legacy was the group that did that. Mm. And it was a leadership, and what their goal was to do leadership training. Basically, they would hold mini legacies where they would make people more comfortable to take a job as a club officer. A lot of times the people, you know, people may be willing to work, but they feel inadequate. They have no idea how to do the job. If you provide a little weekend seminar, which is what Legacy tried to do, if you provide a weekend seminar that will give them the skills, that gives them the confidence to do the job, then they'll take the position.
One of the things, I'm trying to remember who actually started Legacy. It might have been Bob Osgood and the Terrells and several of those people. But it wasn't like you had to be a member of this or a member of that. They would just invite people from around the country that they thought would have input, dancers, callers. And they would invite them to come to a Legacy convention. And so, like, anybody... could come and be a member, and then they discussed basically ways to promote club leadership. Their idea was to train the future club presidents and officers and people who would go out and promote square dancing. So they weren't necessarily trying to find ways to promote square dancing itself. They were trying to find ways to promote people to promote square dancing, if that made any sense at all. And
because recently, you know, we've lost some clubs in northern New Jersey, not because they didn't have a treasury and not because they weren't fairly successful, but because nobody would take the positions of the officers here, and nobody else, and the officers they had had been there long enough. So you need people who will be able to do a job, and sometimes you have to train them.
Eventually, it just kind of died out, and I don't really know exactly why. Mostly a matter was that whole period where just nobody wanted to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But the arts organization now is very similar to what Legacy wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
Although arts is an organization of organizations, as opposed to where Legacy was simply individuals. It was started by individuals, and individuals were invited because of somebody spotted certain leadership qualities in them.
And arts is an ongoing thing now?
Right.
And Square Dancing is a part of that?
Yeah.
Yes.
2 weeks I have to fly to Oklahoma City for their meeting.
Basically, arts, and this was, it was a conception of Mike Jacobs. They started having, summit meetings, I guess would be the term they used, at the national convention with leaders from the different organizations that were there.
I think they called it a roundtable discussion.
That could be it, yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever they called it, they would have the representatives from, say, the National Square Dance...
NEC.
NEC, thank you. The NEC and the USDA and Caller Lab and Round the Lab and the American Callers Association and...
And the campers and the
vendors. And the singles. And they used to have a meeting at the national convention. They still may. I believe they do, still do. But Mike Jacobs thought that if we're trying to promote this activity and all the different aspects of this activity, there is more power in the groups banding together to, say, do advertising or take a hand in the promotion and how we want our activity depicted if we do that as a group than any single organization. Now, Caller Lab has a pretty big organization. The USDA has a pretty big organization. But if you put them together, they have more clout than separately.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with all the other organizations. You band them together, they have more clout. And so out of that grew the arts, which is the Alliance for Square, Round, and Traditional.
Right, ARTS, Alliance of Round, Traditional.
The actual full name is Arts-Dance.
Okay.
It's actually the full name of the organization.
.org. I just found them on the web. Earth-dance.org. Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
And they're very much involved in the promoting of the activity and supporting efforts to promote the activity. I know you mentioned you're familiar with the website that is still an ongoing creation, but it's out there called You Too Can Dance. Where we have videos of the different activities, squares, rounds, and contras, and we're still compiling the database of clubs and leaders throughout North America. We haven't added the European aspect to it yet. They have brochures they put out which describe the activity, nice three-color trifold things. They have a grant program where, for instance, in New Jersey, we run a leadership seminar every 2 years. Well, we apply to them, and they give us money to help run that leadership seminar, and they have that available out there. They have youth scholarships for teens who want to go to caller schools or become leaders. So they're doing a lot of that. In other words, they're using their money. They don't believe their money should be in a bank account someplace.
Hmm. Nice.
Yeah. And they meet. They meet once a year. They normally meet the Sunday after the National Square Dance Convention. But unfortunately, this year the
National Square Dance Convention and the IADSDC Convention overlap.
and the current chairman of the arts and the
secretary
are officers in the IAGSDC.
So how long have you been involved with the arts dance program? Since its inception?
No, we did not get in at the beginning. We were later.
We got, we've probably been involved with the arts for 5-6 years.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
And
we're looking at each other going, huh?
Once again, that's where Mike pretty much was an influence in getting us really involved with that. Betsy's the current vice chairman.
And I represent Caller Lab.
And I represent Rounda Lab. There was a question as to whether, well, should a husband and wife represent two different organizations, but nobody seemed to have a problem with it or think it was a conflict of interest. But there was a discussion about it, and we respected that.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody would just, they wanted to keep us involved, so they said, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. You definitely belong there, each in your own right. Not a problem.
And actually, since most of the time it's after the national convention, and we've always attended the national convention, it made it easy for us to go. Whereas not all the folks at Rounda Lab stay for the national convention to the end, even though the Rounda Lab convention is just prior to the national.
But the arts is very much trying to do everything they can to, everybody talks about national advertising and all that, and they're doing a little bit of that. There was a project that just came up, I think it was another one by Jim Mayo, where he's trying to create a video archive of square dancing. And we helped provide some funding for that. We've provided some funding for people doing historical research to write books and stuff like that. So it's still an evolving organization. But,
what should dancers do? Should they become involved in arts in any way or make contributions? Or
yes,
what would you recommend?
Actually,
there isn't individual memberships. I think it only costs like $35, I think, to join arts. I, to be honest, haven't checked in a while since we've been on the board. But the first thing to do is basically join individually.
And they can attend the meeting if they so desire.
Meetings are open. Absolutely. Of course, we haven't done a great job of publicizing this current one because it's not associated with the national convention. But we do education. We're doing 3 education presentations at the national in Spokane. And two of them are promoting the website.
And how to use it.
So we've made it user-friendly. So, for instance, Dale, you can go in and check your information as a caller, and if it's not, there's a place for you to edit it. Or just if you're not even there, there's a place for you to put it in, and we get you located.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea is we created these videos, 3-minute clips of square dancing, one of round dancing and one of contra dancing. And the whole idea was, you know how difficult it is to explain what we do to somebody who doesn't do it.
Yeah.
And has a preconceived idea of what it really is.
But in today's society, if you tell people, well, here, why don't you go to this website and watch this video? And then if that piques their interest, while they're still on the website, they can click on their location, click on their state, and find a caller in their area or find a cure in their area or find a club in their area.
Oh, that's nice.
And the biggest problem we have is getting the clubs in there because callers, cures, they have big, organizations and these huge databases of their members, whereas there's no one
source
of clubs.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been scouring state websites and we were putting information in, and then we come to find out that website is,
hasn't been updated in 3 years.
Updated, and we get these irate emails. That person's been dead for 2 years. Okay, thanks for telling us.
Know.
We'll delete it. We'll say an email and say this, that, and the other. And I say, hey, I'd be happy to if you would do me a favor and send me all of these things that are incorrect. I'd be happy to fix it. And then of course you don't get a response. So we're encouraging people to go to the website, look for their club. If it's not there or if it's incorrect, because they can list their club. And we list them by city, not by club name. Same thing with
that's
the callers.
Good. Yeah.
You can look at it either way. You can click on it, it says list callers by name or list callers by city. So if I'm coming into the activity and I want to find a club and a caller, let's say I want to have a square dance at my church. So I need a caller. Well, I'm not going to look for Dale Hodge or Betsy Gatta. I'm going to say, well, is there a club in Wilmington, Delaware?
Mm-hmm.
Or is, I'm sorry, is there a caller? Is there a caller anywhere near Wilmington? Or is there a caller anywhere near Des Moines, Iowa? So they would go and they would find the city closest to them and there would be a caller listed. And we're trying to do the same thing with the clubs. If you're interested in dancing, go find your city. And
now that it's up and running, what we need to do is, A, get the word out to all the dancers. And the beauty of having the website is that nobody has to put a personal phone number out. Basically, you can put like a bumper sticker in your car or a sign on your car or whatever that says, youtwocandance.com. youtwocandance.com and nothing else. And after people see youtwocandance.com enough, they're going to look just because they're curious.
Mm-hmm.
And
maybe they'll see something they like.
And you've put the word out, but you're not going to get inundated with phone calls. You're just sending people, unless you're the contact in the website. But you're not putting your phone number in your back window of your car.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's our next project. Now that the website is almost where we'd like it, we can start figuring out ways to get the word out better. Right now, in the Square Dance page, we're adding things to it. There's a new tab that's called Square Dance Diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And we now have a separate page dedicated to square dancing in the gay community.
Hmm.
We don't say gay square dancing because that indicates that it's just for gay dancers.
Right.
Right. Good.
But square dancing in the gay community, and it promotes the fact that it's for everybody. I just finished creating a handicapable page. That's not up and running yet, but it has been sent to the web developers to put it up. And then I'm finishing up a project. There's going to be a teen youth page. So we're trying to get the word out that there's something there for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all through the You Too Can Dance,
right?
Which is a piece of the arts dance.
Yes.
Yeah, that was funded by the arts.
Yeah, we came to the arts looking for funding. We were going to do this website ourselves.
Uh-huh.
And of course, it was right about that time when everybody's 401ks were kind of going in the toilet. So we said, let's see if we can get some funding. And the arts looked at it and said, what you want to do is basically a copy of our mission statement, so why don't we do the whole thing and put you in charge of it?
Hmm.
So, and it's been about a three-year project so far, but we're getting close to having it exactly the way we'd like it.
Mm-hmm.
Great. So, I know that you had mentioned earlier Mike Jacobs and his memorial. I know that the two of you both had the opportunity to speak and share some stories. You were pretty close friends with Mike. Can you tell us a little bit about how you met, when you met, and your relationship with Mike?
That would be you, Betsy.
Well, my problem is the people that are important in my life, I don't really recall when I met them. I suspect that I met Mike Jacobs or got to know him better in 1970 in Louisville, Kentucky, because that was his hometown. The National Convention was there. And my parents and I took his first wife, Patty, with us to that National Convention.
Ah.
But I have no memory specifically of this. I know that we took Patty to that convention. I know that Mike came from Louisville. It's just people are very important parts of my life, and I'm like, when did I meet them?
Yeah,
I don't remember.
You've known them forever, right?
Yeah, they've always been here.
It's just kind of like, I knew Mike a long time. He was probably one of my best friends, but as to exactly when we met him, it was just like, okay, Mike's here. I remember him, before he married Patty, because I knew Patty before Mike did. also.
Uh-huh. You should tell the Del Valle story.
That was the first time Betsy and I kind of went out. She convinced me to be her dance partner at a Delaware Valley square dance convention.
Because my other dance partner had some other commitment that came up.
Just for the Saturday night of the convention, but of course you had to buy the whole convention thing. And her father.
And they were sold out.
They were sold out. Her father was supposed, he wasn't going to be dancing that night because he was calling someplace. So he was going to leave his badge for me to use to get in, and he forgot. So I'm going down to Philadelphia, and the only person who had the guts to go to the convention committee and say, I lost my badge, can you give me another one, was Patty Mulgrew, which is Mike's first wife. So they gave her another badge, and she gave it to me, and I blocked out the TY, and I was Pat Mulgrew for the evening. And we had really done it well. I talked with Patty and got all the stuff on, you know, mom and dad and all that sort of stuff. And so we told everybody that I was her brother. But this figure was 1971 time. And people want to know, well, how can we...
72, actually, wasn't it?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. 71, okay. 72. And why hadn't... We've seen you before. I says, well, I was a conscientious objector, and I had to go to Canada.
And, the story's getting longer and longer, right?
Oh, yeah. But recently the courts had finally gotten around to looking at my case and agreed that I was a conscientious objector and I was allowed back in the country.
Oh, my God.
So for quite a few years, Mike believed that I was Patty's brother.
Oh, that's so cute.
So it was, you know, things just go round and round and round. So that's basically where, and then of course Mike with his interest in baseball and my interest in baseball, we hit it off, you know, really well, because we both played high school and a little college ball, and of course you could talk trivia about pretty much any subject in the world with Mike, and he knew everything.
Yeah.
Because he read everything, he watched old movies, and he had that eidetic memory, so once he read it, it was there. So that's pretty much where that all started.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, you meet somebody and you connect. You know, Mike and I, our connection was calling, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I was calling longer, but he paid more attention to it because I had to, started early enough. I was busy with other things for a while and had to grow up. So my expertise and my experience did not necessarily match.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And Mike kind of gave me pointers. I probably gave him pointers. And we just went back and forth in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So despite the distance between you geographically, did you become good friends?
Yes. Mike was the person... overall, and of course the distance geographically got smaller because he ended up moving first to the D.C. area,
mm-hmm.
and then to New Jersey for various reasons, you know, one being the D.C. area being to be near Christy as she grew up, and then New Jersey because he met and married Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
But the basically Mike was the person, usually via telephone, that I would talk to when I wanted a reasonable assessment of something that I was trying to deal with, and I was feeling too emotional to be sensible.
I see.
The best instance I can do is the night that they were going to pull the plug, the night that they were out there and they were going to take him off of life support. The guy who was running the class that Mike was calling for, I had been planning to sub for that class because Mike wasn't coming home that day, even mm-hmm. before he got sick.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who ran the class or runs the club class wanted to hold the class anyway. So I went and I called, and then after we taught everything that was on the schedule to be taught, we informed them that basically Mike was really sick and was not expected to live. And this one woman just totally had hysterics.
Mm.
And she was screaming about how we disrespected Mike and by holding the class. And I'm going, no, Mike would want us to hold the class.
Yeah.
Mike would have told us to hold the class. Yeah. But she was yelling about that and on the way home. And of course I felt really great. And on the way home I'm thinking, you know, the person I would have called to talk to about this
was Mike.
Oh. When things came up with me and, you know, in different political things.
Yeah.
Now, Roy is too close. I can't talk to Roy about this stuff because he's too protective.
Right.
I would just assume whatever the problem is, just have them killed.
Right. Roy is too protective. Mike would strategize. He would say, you're overreacting, you're doing this, now you need to do this, now go and pay attention to that.
Yeah.
And he was the person that I would call, and you know, we spent quite a bit of time on the telephone talking over stuff that comes up in life.
Yeah. A nice objective sounding board for you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And is there any one thing that mostly remember Mike teaching you?
Basically, as I moved into calling Advance and Challenge, he was there to advise.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember anything basic that he taught me, because the person who helped me with calling Advance and Challenge Advanced in the beginning was Bruce Bush. But Mike was there to advise, and I could, you know, as a caller in the Advance and Challenge realm, you don't always want to show weakness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you don't know something, but Mike was the person I could say, hey, I'm not sure how this works.
I think one of the things that Mike kept on you about as you moved into Advanced and Challenge is you have to stop being too nice.
Mm.
Betsy was always very helpful and this and that. And
still am.
Mike kept using the words, sometimes you have to do triage, and certain squares you're just going to have to understand that they're going to die.
No matter what you do to help.
And you've got to salvage the rest of the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So, and
yeah.
Mike was pretty good at that. He could kill a square pretty quickly.
He didn't kill it. He let it die.
That's right. It did its own suicide.
It did its own suicide.
It was already facing the cliff. He just didn't apply the brace.
He didn't grab him by the belt and pull him back.
Right.
Yeah. So one thing that I found very encouraging that I actually never told Mike, but there were some dancers who originally were from Louisville and had moved to D.C. About the time that Mike kind of transitioned from being a newish caller to really deciding he was going to focus on this and be really good. And so
right.
I was talking to them just in general about calling, nothing specific. And I said, yo, you guys were from Louisville. Did you used to dance to Mike when he was just getting started? And the two of them got very quiet and looked at each other.
Uh-huh.
And then looked at me and, you know, there's nobody else around. They don't even know what we're talking about, but leaned in and sort of whispered and said, everybody used to leave the room when Mike would call because he was so bad.
Uh-huh.
And the thing that I took from that wasn't that he was bad.
No.
Was if you apply yourself and you really work at something, you can become the best at something regardless of where you start.
Yeah.
Right.
And for him to have, you know, it was, she said it was a very consistent thing that people, you know, they just knew, and he just, that he was, you know, hadn't gotten it yet.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, I guess they heard his name and they're like, really? He's doing weekends? Can't believe it. And they went and they were like blown away that this was the same person.
Wow.
So.
Well, that's the good part about having called for as long as I have. All the people who remember how bad I am aren't dancing anymore.
How bad you were.
How bad I was, yes.
Yeah, you said how bad you
How bad I was, yes. They're not dancing anymore for one or another reason.
Yeah.
But we've always talked to the newer callers at the caller schools and people we're mentoring around here. Ideally, when you're first learning to call, if you could do it 100 miles away from where you're eventually going to
where you wanted to become famous.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing is to remind people they should not push themselves into doing something that they're not ready, because they can do their career a lot of harm because people will remember, oh my God, I danced to so-and-so, they were so bad.
Yeah.
And they don't give them that second chance.
Yep. What great stories. I really like hearing about all of the history.
Me too. This is one of the favorite parts I think I've mentioned before. I like talking to the callers because they do have so many colorful stories that we don't have to all know about. Everybody knows about one or two if they know the people, but yeah. I liked hearing about Mike Jacobs. He was one of the first national level square dance callers that I liked. He was on the top of my list for a really long time, and it was good to hear how they met them so early and maybe even got Mike and Patty, his first wife, together. So that was fun.
Yeah, that was great. And I'm very impressed with the website and the work that Roy and Betsy have done with You Two Can Dance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good to see that they're trying to get something that can help dancers and help non-dancers maybe become dancers. So get people involved and connected, and it's a great thing.
Yep. And as I get on in years, I'm appreciating more and more keeping a lot of the history alive.
Mm-hmm. I did not know about Legacy or the arts program, but both of those sound, like you said, very worthwhile activities. And this is, we're kind of continuing the oral tradition where stories are passed from one generation to the next. We're just using electronic media, which is going to make it easier for those stories to stick around accurately, maybe.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Yep. So what do you have coming up this weekend, Barb?
This coming weekend, I get to sing in church. We practice and we get our big chance on Sunday. We're a small choir. We have anywhere from 8 to 15 people. But it's we always get high praise because the church has wonderful acoustics. So people think there are a lot more people up there than there really are. But it's a really good group. There's some excellent singers in that group, including a professional who's not paid by the church, but she has been on the stage. So we've got excellent voices.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And how about you?
I am driving to Delaware. Get to call a dance in Wilmington, Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
Get to go spend Saturday hanging out with my best friend from college and then seeing him that evening in the show Man of La Mancha. In Reading, Pennsylvania. And then we finish the weekend with dinner with friends, and I will let you know next week how it was.
Sounds wonderful.
I'd like to say thanks again to our guests, Roy and Betsy Gatta out of New Jersey. Really enjoy hearing the stories and their history.
Indeed. And this is Barb Jarvis from Wheeling, Illinois. Goodbye, Dale. Have a good week, everyone.
This is Dale Hodge from Columbia, Maryland. Ciao, Barb. Happy dancing. See y'all on the dance floor. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.